Hey everyone, this is Billy.
And this is Angela.
And guess what? We're a couple of geeks. We are finally back after our, oh my goodness, is it a year hiatus?
No, it's like 6 months.
6 months. Clearly she's the one keeping the calendar here, people. Aren't we married for like 5 years?
No, three.
Yeah, wow. You know, 3-5 years, something like that. Anyways, we're glad to be back. We're hoping that we get some new followers, and we're hoping we keep some of the old ones. Sorry we were gone for so long, that 6 months to a year, whatever it was.
6 months. And we are so happy to be here on the Fandible Network. Of course, we've been here doing our actual play podcast. That's been going on for well over a year at this point. It's been almost 2 years.
Go Fandible!
Yay! And so we decided to move our podcast over here, kind of consolidate all of our podcasting activities.
So, you're in luck. You get us back, people, and we're going to have a great run, I am sure. By the way, this will be our last podcast.
What?
I'm just kidding. Now, you have to excuse me. I'm going to have a bit of a cold. I've been having a cold for the last couple months, apparently, and that's been my big reason. Like, I can't podcast. I'm sorry. Until I actually have to podcast for role-playing, then I'm apparently okay. So if you hear me hack or cough, just ignore it and act like I'm just giggling. See, right there, that was actually a cough right there. Yeah. I'm really good at disguising it.
No, it wasn't.
So, Angela, what are we talking about tonight?
Well, we're having kind of a grab bag night. We actually think that might be our new format, just talking about what comes up.
All right, what is coming up? What has been new lately for the geek community?
Well, the Avengers, hello.
Yes, if you have not seen the Avengers...
You're not a geek.
Then, yeah, well, first off, you're not a geek. Stop listening, Mom! Oh, sorry. But if you haven't seen it, seriously, go see it. It does a good job telling it. Angela, what would you rate it?
See, here's my predicament with rating the Avengers.
Uh-oh.
We did not see it opening night. Because opening night was when we were originally dying of our colds. And so that gave people a couple of days to say, oh my gosh, this is the best movie ever.
Oh, okay. I was wondering if you were actually going to say, well, since we didn't see it opening night, it wasn't as exciting. And that's like, wow, really? Wait, you say your grading is going to be altered if you see it opening night? But no, I see your point. Yes, we had everyone telling us on the internet, on the TV, our friends saying...
And of course, on Twitter, I've been hearing it for 2 weeks because people like Aussie Slayerette lives in Australia, got it 2 weeks before the U.S. did. So she's out there saying, ha-ha, I saw it first. It was amazing. Suck it, U.S.
Suck it, U.S.
She didn't actually say that.
But I see your point. So yes, we had everyone telling us how amazing it was. So I guess when I walked into the theaters and it started... I expected I expected a 2.5 hour long erection to erupt.
Oh my gosh.
I'm sorry.
The
way it was told to me, I expected this to be the greatest movie on earth. And since it was just a solid A flick, I felt a little bit disappointed.
Exactly.
So, you know what? If anybody comes to you and says it's the greatest movie ever, don't listen to them. And don't fall for the hype. Truth be told,
except for our hype where Billy just told you that it's great and you need to drop everything and go see it.
Yeah, screw you. But truthfully, very good story. It was well done. I think they did miss a few things, though, wouldn't you say? There's a few things I would have like seen expand on, though I did hear they cut 30 minutes out of the film.
And it's still 2.5 hours long.
So hopefully... What was missing, I felt, is going to be put back in.
I heard one of the things that was cut was actually a lot of Captain America, because, as Joss Whedon said, and I think is true, Captain America is very much the heart of the film, because he is kind of the upstanding young man who's in this because he believes in the greater good. Whereas people like Tony Stark, it's like, yeah, millionaire, playboy, philanthropist. Yeah, he's not in it necessarily for the greater good, or he has a healthy amount of ego, much more than Captain America does. So, a lot of what was cut was like Captain America adjusting to the fact that it's now the 21st century, and pretty much anyone he ever knew is dead.
Really?
Or really old.
That would have been really kind of fun.
I think there may have been a reunion with the love interest from Captain America films.
I was actually wondering if that was going to happen. For some reason, I thought that was probably something they should have brought up, but they didn't. One of the things that I thought was missing was actually the Hulk. Like, okay, so the entire point of why that guy got captured, what was his name? Loki?
Loki.
Yeah, Loki. I call it, yeah, Loki, Bugman. He gets captured is because he wants to release the Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
And he releases the Hulk, and yes, shit gets real really quickly to the point where he ends up getting jumping out of the plane, jumping out of the fortress and falling. And exactly. Falling all the way down. And then he wakes up, and then the attack on New York happens. And then he just arrives as if he had some kind of life-altering experience, or at least something to tell him, yes, I'm going to be the Hulk, and yes, I'm going to be really crazy, but I can control it to a point. Whereas when he was in, like, the Shield's fortress, he just kind of went nuts.
I think there's an implication, and again, it certainly could have been made more explicit, but I believe the implication is, if he chooses to Hulk out, he can control it. On the fortress, he just hulked out because he was so mad and freaked out. It's just like, rawr, Hulk smash. Whereas in New York City, he had the cool line of the secret is I'm always angry. And then, rawr, Hulk. He can actually talk.
I guess. I kind of wanted just a little bit more of that. Because honestly, I think it was one of the best Hulks. The guy who played him did a fantastic job. I think the CGI for the Hulk really rocked. And who did not enjoy seeing the Hulk through that entire fight at the very end? He was funny. He was badass. He was everything I wanted in this movie rolled up in the one. I'm excited for another Hulk movie to be made. And who would have thought I'd ever say that?
Indeed.
I feel bad for, who was it? Edward Norton? No, God,
yes.
No. Yeah, Edward Norton was the original Hulk, yeah.
Oh, no.
Not
no,
the
no.
original Hulk, but he was the last Hulk. I feel bad for him, though, because I thought he did a fairly good job, too.
And he shot himself in the foot.
Oh, yeah, because he was pretty much very demanding about the
yes.
what the Hulk would say.
But Mark Ruffalo is friends with Ed Norton, and when they approached Mark Ruffalo for the role of the Hulk, he actually spoke to Ed Norton's, like, hey, is this okay that I take this role? And he totally got Norton's blessing. The way Mark Ruffalo put it is that the Hulk is this generation's Hamlet. Everyone's going to play him.
Oh, yes, yes. You know, I've always liked the actor, though. What's his name again?
Mark Ruffalo?
I loved him so much, I remember his name.
Oh, he's in 13 going on 30.
I know. That's like the movie when I first noticed him. I'm like, he's a really good actor. He's kind of a subtle, shy guy. I really enjoy. And every time I see him, I'm like, hey, 13 going on 30. Now I'm going to start looking at him and say, hey, Hulk, which is significantly cooler than, hey, you're the guy from 13 going on 30. It's like looking at someone saying, hey, you're from the Hotel for Dogs, aren't you?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, really odd. Was it 1999 when that came out?
Don't ask me. I never actually saw it.
Psh, then you missed out on a glorious film.
Indeed. Speaking of glorious films, in the discussion on Google Plus about The Avengers, one of many discussions on Google Plus, because despite articles you may have seen online, Google Plus is not a ghost town. Someone said that that Avengers for him was his, at least for his son, was his son's Star Wars movie.
Really?
Yes, that it was pretty much the best film since Star Wars.
Okay. That seems a little bit, well, maybe, I mean, I don't know, but Star Wars had such a big impact on the world.
For me, it's like, if it was merely a favorite movie, if The Avengers is now your favorite movie, to me that's a very different thing from calling back to an iconic film like Star Wars, because Star Wars is so much more than a movie. And I say this as someone who isn't a big fan of Star Wars.
You son of a bitch.
No, it's true. And especially, it's like, if we are looking at the original trilogy, the original Star Wars movie isn't even the best of the trilogy.
What? Wait, what? Oh, I thought you were saying, like, the original trilogy not the best. I'm like, are you... what?
A New Hope is the weakest of the original trilogy.
Yeah, I would say the third one is.
I like Ewoks.
Okay, okay, I understand. I love Ewoks too, but...
But either way, to call something better than Star Wars, or the best since Star Wars, it either ignores the presence of the Empire Strikes Back, which is clearly the best of the Star Wars movies ever, but also, Star Wars, as I said, is so much more than just a movie. It became this cultural touchstone. Billy and I were talking about this at dinner, and I'm pretty sure that about the only movie that is quoted as much as Star Wars in, like, the general population, probably have to go back to The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, even if people who...
I mean, The Wizard of Oz is referenced in The Avengers, even.
Oh, that is true, because...
It's just, like, the best moment for Captain America, in my opinion.
But, yeah, no, you're right. A lot of people, even if they have not seen Star Wars, they know what the Force is. Use the Force. Do or do not. Hopefully they also know, it's a trap, because that's the greatest line ever.
I am your father.
I am your father. They know the basic tenets of what goes on in Star Wars. Though, my mother is also one of those people that say, I love Star Trek with Han Solo. And I'm like, Mom, you don't... Stop talking, geek. We will never be one.
But without Star Wars, that sort of confusion could have never happened. Because yeah. Star Trek would have just been this funny little TV show that ran for a couple of years and probably was quickly forgotten. The only reason you have Star Trek the motion picture is they were trying to capitalize on the popularity of Star Wars.
That's true. And not only that, but I think Star Wars gave a legitimacy to sci-fi in general mm-hmm. of, hey, this can not only be something that gets your fans, but it can also be something that the popular culture itself is interested in seeing. People are going to want these things. And not only that, but Lucas... He started an empire off just the merchandising to low. Aha! But no.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, 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 dun. But on the merchandising alone, he proved that, yeah, by the way, you can make a lot of money by just selling toys of Ewoks. And I would know because I had a Wicket doll.
I didn't actually.
Yeah, I know. You didn't see Star Wars until I showed it to you.
I saw Star Wars before you. Thank you very much.
You did?
Do not insult my parents like that. My parents showed me Star Wars.
Well, you didn't appreciate
it.
I
went out to see Star Wars in the movie theaters, and they re-released it when we were in middle school.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Well, good
for
them.
We had the trilogy on VHS. We got it before Lucas went in and did his edits for the release in the 90s.
I have that on the DVDs now, and I love that. They're like, yeah, by the way, we're going to release all the original movies, but we're going to edit it out. And people are like, no, and they're like, sorry, this is the whole thing we're going to release. And then, like, a year later, like, okay, fine, we'll give you the original shit. Twice as much. I'm like, damn you. You know, you have me by the balls. Nose. Impossible.
But to get back on topic a little bit.
We did have a topic, didn't we?
Yes. The Avengers, I had fun with. Certainly can do worse for summer entertainment, as far as I'm concerned, and we're actually going to talk about that next. But to call it a film like Star Wars just ignores so much of Star Wars' impact on our culture. As geeks, as film lovers, as Americans, really.
Americans.
No, you can't separate a lot of Star Wars from American culture. Just like you can't separate The Wizard of Oz.
And before anybody gets nerd rage at us saying, you can't say that, we don't really care that someone wow, really? I'm married to that woman? Mm-hmm. No one really cares that you're going to say that Avengers is the next Star Wars. We just don't think it's the case. We think we just don't think that the Avengers is going to make as much of an impact as Star Wars did. Are we going to say, you're wrong and an idiot for doing it? Yes, but we'll do it in a very polite manner. But no, we're fine with it. But you know what's really weird that I've noticed talking about, like, really weird nerd rage? Okay, I'm on Reddit, which is apparently my life right now.
It is. I'm totally Redditor's wife.
I know. You are totally Redditor's wife. Anyways, I'm reading, somebody released something, they made a post where it's like, hey guys, Battleship, the movie coming out based on the game, Battleship, is coming out, I think, well, tomorrow. Or no, on Friday. Yeah, Friday. And this guy's like, hey guys, we need to boycott movies like this. So we need to see, like, good movies out there, movies that really capture the audience's soul. Go see The Avengers. And people were like, really? I mean, this guy was absolutely 100% behind the idea that it was insulting for a movie like Battleship to be made. So you should go see the Avengers instead. I just seemed a little, I thought it was a little bit goofy that, I don't know, to look down on, it's kind of like me looking down on Pepsi and saying, thank God I have this Coke here. And, you know, taking a big swig and smiling and always Coca-Cola. But I just felt it was a little bit weird, as if people are putting Avengers in this limelight of the next big thing. The next Star Wars. Not that I don't care. I mean, I am going to see Battleship. Sorry, Ange, I am. You know why I'm going to see the Battleship? It's the same exact reason I'm going to see the Avengers. Not because of plot. Not because of action. Not because of amazing characters. I'm sure the Avengers do have them. I'm seeing it because it's a summer blockbuster. And it's going to be fun. I hope.
I have my doubts.
Really?
Battleship looks dumb.
Well, you're going to be proven wrong when we go to the midnight release of it, girlfriend.
I mean, it's based on a game that has no plot.
Mm-hmm.
The Avengers is based on, what is it, like 60 years of comic plotting?
No, I'm sorry, but you're saying, okay, it's not like they made a game over they didn't make a movie about the game. It didn't say, hey, you know, there's a rich storyline. No, they got inspiration for Battleship. It's a story about aliens, and it's a story about a battleship fighting it, so it's called Battleship. They got inspiration from the idea.
All Battleship is a strategy game where it just so happens to be you're trying to attack other naval ships.
Right.
You are one navy fighting another. You are not an alien attacking U.S. Navy. Yeah,
just because they got a little bit of inspiration for it, and honestly, they're like, okay, let's think of a movie, a summer blockbuster. Hey, remember this game, Battleship? Hey, let's make a battleship, and now let's actually come up with a story. It doesn't mean that it's going to be a bad movie.
No, it does not mean it's going to be a bad movie. What means it's going to be a bad movie is the absolutely atrocious things that we've seen of it so far.
Like,
I mean, Rihanna is there simply to be the magical Negro character. Do you remember the trailer where she's standing there talking about how her grandfather knew about what these things are and nobody listened to him?
You know,
and so now we have to face off this horrific evil. It's like,
she doesn't say she's talking about the aliens. She could be talking about Rust. She'd be like, yeah, my grandfather used to, you know, clean this area.
That's even more insulting if that is her purpose in the film.
Well, you know what? Until we see the film, we will not know what that woman's role is, Angela. And I think that is academically suspect. Thank you. So how dare you?
How dare you?
How dare you? We're gonna see Battleship this week, people.
I don't want to see Battleship.
No, no. Listen, if I got dragged to see, what was it called? Vanity Gardens? Vanity Fair? Like,
no, you have used up the Vanity Fair card in the last 5 years.
It was that bad, people. This woman did everything wrong. She cheated on her husband. And at the end, you know what her punishment was? She got to marry a ugly guy. Okay, that sucks. Who was rich. And she got to ride an elephant in her wedding. How is that a punishment? I would marry an ugly, rich, fat guy so just as long as I got to ride an elephant at the very end. Worst movie ever.
And that was seriously, at minimum, 5 years ago.
It has a 7-year lifespan.
It was probably 7 years.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'm milking it once more for Battleship.
This is the last.
I can't wait till you take me to another bad movie. You're just gonna see halfway through the movie me pull out a little notebook and just make a little mark, a little scribble, and then I'm gonna put it away. And you'll be like, "Did you just mark it?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'll be remembering this one." So, what was the last? How about you guys? I'm curious for our listeners, all six of you. What was the last movie that was the next Star Wars? What movie out there do you think puts as much dialogue in the culture, changed the culture, changed the business like Star Wars did? Angela, do you have any idea? Do you have any guess about what movie would consider that to be?
Well, I was just thinking, at dinner I said Avatar.
Simply, Avatar because the 3D.
Yeah, the 3D. I said Avatar because of the 3D, because of the massive blockbuster box office intake. You know, it set all these records. It was amazing. Never actually saw it.
It was good. I saw it.
But the more, I was just thinking, it's like, no, I think it was Titanic.
You think Titanic did it? Why would you say that?
Well, if one of the things we're counting is things like quotability.
I'll never let go.
I'll never let go. I'm the king of the world.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
I've seen an uptick in Draw Me Like One of Your French Girls since it was re-released last month, which is a really weird random line.
Well, it was a weird random line in the movie, but okay.
It's just like, okay, this is a weird thing that we're bringing up.
So, you know what? Maybe it was. Like, you know, back in, you know, I was pretty young when it came out, but I don't remember a lot of movies that had that drama action. It was like a drama. It was a drama action or a romance action instead of like an action romance. It was like, no, this is a romance, and at the very end, you get the awesome part. Mm-hmm. That was kind of the first time we actually saw that and saw it done extremely well.
And of course, it also, you know, it was a major technological advancement.
Oh, absolutely. It was beautifully done.
And except for the sky.
Was this guy? Oh, yeah.
It was fixed.
It was fixed.
And, of course, it made huge stars out of Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet. They're still huge stars.
Which, you know, I'm really happy about, because people didn't think DiCaprio was going to make it, but I always thought he was a decent actor.
He disappeared for a couple of years, which I think was what he needed to do.
Yeah, and then he came back. I think his next big role was Catch Me If You Can.
Yeah, because he needed to take some time off. Yeah. And kind of disassociate himself from the young pretty boy so he could come back as a serious adult actor. He was still, I haven't seen it as much recently, but he, for a while, was still the romantic lead.
He was, and then he really started making his characters kind of gross and people you don't really have sympathy for. Mm-hmm. Like Shutter Island, I thought he did a really well, a good job acting.
Yes.
So, you would say Titanic, you know
I
what?
I think so.
You know, I want to hear your comments, people out there, Redditors, listeners. I really want to hear what you guys think was the last movie that made as much of an impact as Star Wars. But you know what? I'm going to put my vote towards definitely Titanic. I think that did indeed make one.
Ooh, another possibility.
Toy Story?
Yes.
Yes!
Oh my gosh!
Wow! Yes! People, this is how you know you're in love. That and the sex. But good. Yeah, Toy Story, I only think of one quote I can remember from Toy Story. No, I can remember a couple. The Claw and To Infinity and Beyond.
You are a sad, strange little man.
Oh, no, no. I don't know. I know Redditor has that memes of, you know,
Something everywhere.
Yeah, something everywhere. Diablo 3 anger. Diablo 3 anger everywhere, you know. That is something.
Mm-hmm. But Toy Story, the argument is because, again, it was the first full-length computer animated film, which is clearly this juggernaut genre right now. I mean, since Toy Story came out, there was quite a rapid decline in traditional cel-shaded animation. You had The Princess and the Frog a couple years ago. That didn't do very well, so now we're back onto the everything is computer-generated bandwagon.
Oh, which is sad, but yeah.
So, and it just shot forward this technology. Pixar is the name in animation today, at least in the United States. I mean, there's still Miyazaki over in Japan. Mm-hmm. But here in the U.S., the name is Pixar.
It is absolutely Pixar. And, you know, not only that, but I'm also going to give props to definitely Disney, who hopped on that bandwagon, which have been linked with Pixar because they bought them, and I think Pixar also moved away after a while. They've been a lot of work between them. Mm-hmm. And you can see that when they did something, released such, one of my favorite movies, Tangled.
Yeah.
I will.
Well, because what Disney very wisely did, because Disney hadn't had Disney had quite the renaissance in the 90s, but after that, after like The Hunchback of Notre Dame, it started to kind of lose quality again. So what Disney did was they took John Lasseter, who was the head of Pixar, and they made him the head of all animation at Disney. So he still oversees stuff that Pixar is doing, but then he also has a hand in Tangled.
Oh, right, which is a brilliant move. And movie.
Yes, it was. And then you see that Pixar still continues to dominate today. They keep for advancing their technology. Because remember, for a long time, computer-generated water looked like crap.
Oh, it did.
And then they did Finding Nemo. And now you can find, you know, reliably good water. In the upcoming Brave, they were talking about how, like, they just put so much effort into animating Merida's hair.
Right.
Yeah, and from the trailers, at least, it's like, oh, I can see this. Her hair is like another freaking character. I cannot wait for Brave.
It's going to be amazing. I have no idea what it's about. I mean, I know it's the basic story is she doesn't want to get married. She wants her own, you know, that independence, and that's great.
But could you sound any more condescending?
Huh? I know I sound condescending. But all they've shown me is the stereotypical girl doesn't want to get married and she wants to live her own life. I've seen it a million times, and that's great. But there's something more. There's a magical element. I'm guessing they get turned into bears. I'm going to call it, they get turned into bears.
I know that she goes to a witch and she asks for a spell that will change her fate.
Right.
And presumably at least her three little brothers get turned into bears. Because you got three mischievous brothers, and there's three mischievous bear cubs.
Bears! So, yeah, I'm assuming that's what happened. I'm very excited about that. There's a couple movies that I'm really excited about. You know what? Another movie that I know we're just jumping off away from
that.
That's fine. It's Steve Carell. I think it's
Keira Knightley. Looking for a date for the end of the world?
Yeah, something like that. It's just basically, I read a book a long time ago. It was about a guy who was driving across the United States trying to get home to his mom and dad. And in 2 weeks, the world was going to end. An asteroid was going to hit. And there was nothing you could do about it. And it was just him observing everyone. Just how some places were open, some people were partying. And it was a really fun book. And I'm excited to see that's what they're kind of going with this movie. It's just, we tried to save the Earth, and in two weeks we're dead.
They had better commit.
Oh,
that movie had better end with the world fucking ending.
Oh, absolutely. I absolutely am almost 100% sure that that's how they're going to end it. Because, I trust Steve Carell as a good actor. He makes good decisions. Well, no. Dinner for Schmucks.
It was terrible.
That was awful. But the story sounds so compelling, they would completely shit on it by saying, oh, wait a minute, broke up in the atmosphere, we're fine. I think you have to die. They will have to die at the end in order to make it complete. It seems like a very good movie, though.
I hope so. I don't think it's screened for critics yet or anything, so there's no reviews of it yet. But a lot of the movie blogs that I read have actually kind of dismissed it already because they don't like Keira Knightley.
That's a disappointment. I mean, she's not the best, but I liked her.
I've never disliked Keira Knightley in a movie.
No, you know what? She's never... Here's my thing about Keira Knightley. I never see a movie and I say, wow, that Keira Knightley. She was awesome. I've never seen a movie that way. But I've never left a movie saying, wow, what was up with Keira Knightley? She's a solid actress.
And we've actually missed a lot of what is considered to be some of her best work, because it was all period films, and we don't tend to go see, we didn't see Atonement, we didn't see Pride and Prejudice.
We learned our lessons from period films.
Oh my God.
Vanity Fair!
So we missed a lot of the big name films. It's like we saw her in Pirates. I thought she was great. We saw her in Bend It Like Beckham. I love that movie.
Yes, she did a very good job. And I guess I'm really interested in seeing her in a role that is not going to be taken away by action. This seems like it's a legitimate, serious comedy. Dramedy. That really focuses on her, and it's really going to be interesting seeing how she pulls it off as an actress, because I've always thought she was good. I think this movie will tell me if she's great.
Once she learned how to close her mouth when she was acting.
She did have a thing about opening her mouth quite a bit and leaving it there.
No. For a paper in college, I analyzed the Pirates of the Caribbean trilogy. And there is a moment at the end of Pirates 2 when she locks Jack in chains. She closes her mouth. And then in Pirates 3, you no longer see her standing there slack jaw. So it was either a purposeful character development to, like, show her growing up into an adult, or somebody took Keira Knightley aside and was like, hey, honey, we don't want to see your teeth that much.
Yeah. So I do like her. Here's the thing about Keira Knightley. She's a good actress. But I also like her just whenever she talks to the camera. It's really respectful, but she's very firm in her beliefs of, listen, I don't want you messing with my busts and posters.
Yep.
My breasts are my breasts. Yes, I will wear corsets. I will do this. But don't make my boobs look giant, because that's not who I am, and that's not what I want little girls to see. I think it's really great for when women stand up and say, I'm sorry, Hollywood, I have enough power to say, no, you can't exploit
and
me.
And it's great that she actually has that ability, and the studios seem to listen to her when she's so young.
Yes.
Because usually you need to be like Meryl Streep before you have the ability to have that sort of say over your image.
Absolutely. And I think Megan Fox, unfortunately, she wasn't a great actress. But she really tried to do that, too, but she went a little too far, a little too quickly. She was too young to be able to get away with some of the stuff she was saying. And I do think she went a little bit too far.
Well, she certainly wasn't the most tactful about it, but
she wasn't
tactful. Certainly sounds like Michael Bay was a shit to her.
Of course, of course Michael Bay is a shit. But when you're that young, you kind of have to put up with shitheads. And I know, it sucks. It's the business.
There's putting up with it. And then there's being subject to constant sexual harassment.
I know. And don't get me wrong. I am not defending Michael Bay. I'm just saying I think I was fine with her coming out the way I think she went a little too far. Not morally.
You should not call your director Hitler.
Yeah. Not morally. I think she has the right to it. I just think it hurt her career more. If she had just kept it how she was earlier, saying, no, I think this character is being exploited for her looks. I want her to be more. I think that would have done more and given her more credence and not hurt her career as much. But her bad acting also hurt her career. Yes. I'm not a fan of her acting, unfortunately. I like her as a person. I think her acting's crap. Sadly. Maybe I just haven't seen...
Again, we've only seen her really in Transformers and... Nobody was getting the A-game stuff to work
I saw her in a Jonah Hex, but Jonah Hex was...
I heard that was a terrible movie,
It was too. Just a terrible movie altogether. And wasn't she in some, like, Succubus?
Jennifer's Body, which was torn up by a lot of critics, but a lot of feminists that I've talked to have said that it's actually a really interesting film.
I'm actually... Maybe we should rent that and, give it a chance. But, okay, so far we've talked about... The Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about the next Star Wars and how other people think it's the Avengers. We talked about Alitas and people looking down on things like Battleship, but...
Which is the right attitude.
Whatever. I'm sorry.
Whatever.
If you want to say, don't see Battleship, but instead see this independent film, I am a little bit more understanding. But it just seems for me Battleship and Avengers are kind of in the same category of summer blockbuster. I'm probably making enemies online. I can just see people donning.
People are going to figure out where we live, and because you're on Reddit, and Reddit can figure out where people live, and they're going to kill us in our sleep.
Kill us in our sleep with a big Thor hammer.
Ha.
So that's something they want for publicity, I'm sure.
Ha.
Okay, so that seems to be our talking points for our movies tonight, unless we had anything else to discuss, do you think? Okay, so we had a good conversation about movies. Since this is a role-playing podcast, our Fandible site, a lot of our stuff, we figured we'd take a short time to discuss some of the role-playing that we've done lately, some things we've learned, some systems we tried, and some things we are really looking for in a system.
We're looking for in a system. We had this discussion a couple of weeks ago, and I didn't write it down. What are you thinking, Billy? What are you thinking?
Let's talk about what systems we've played, and then we can go into like what we liked about it, what we didn't like about it, and then I think that will tell us what we want in a system. Okay. Well, let's start good. Let's start something with really a solid one. Hollow Earth.
Woohoo!
The Hollow Earth Expedition, also known as Hex, is something we've played. Angela's actually running the game. She's a wonderful storyteller. It's pulp 1930s.
When my characters don't do stupid things and I don't know what to do with them next.
You need to be a better storyteller.
You just said I was great!
Yeah, until you blame the characters. Never blame the characters, honey.
Okay, people, the last time that we played Hollow Earth, I had them on a pirate ship, and they started the game in the brig. And by the end of the game, they were back in the brig.
I'm sorry, would they
except for Jesus's crazy scientist who always ends up in jail. Somehow he managed to not be in jail.
No. I'm just going to say it right now. Angela's like Hollow Earth has to is extremely has a strong female presence.
That's intentional.
And they do not like men who I'm going to say it, say their opinion. And that's why we were in the brig in the beginning, and that's when we were in the brig, because whatever the guys say, it's dismissed as foolish man talk. I said it. There you go.
Did you not read the blog post I made about how I designed the world for Hollow Earth?
Oh, honey, I don't read your blog posts.
No, it was a very purposeful decision to create a lot of matriarchal societies in Hollow Earth because I felt it was a way to really underscore the... I felt that it was a way to really underscore the theme of the game, which is that once you are inside the Earth, you have gone through the looking glass, and everything you know is just topsy-turvy. Dinosaurs exist. Magic seems to exist. You've got ape men and mantis men and all these crazy fantastical things. On top of that, the society as you know it to exist.
And that's perfectly fine. I'm perfectly fine. But don't blame the men folk, the players, for getting back in the brigs for us legitimately being ignored by everybody we warned. We're like, she's bad. She's bad news. She's bad news. And they're like, you silly
man. You don't know that she got you back in the brig.
Well, you know what? She got us back. I'm just going to do it. I'm going to say it. We got back in the brig because females hate men. I said it. We were all thinking it. But it is a very fun story. It's very amusing. I'm having a great time with it. Just
don't
blame us.
You're going to have a great time sleeping on the couch tonight.
I'm sorry. In this society, I'm going to sleep on the bed and you could sleep on the couch. But through the looking glass, girl!
No, that's every day.
Uh-huh. Okay, but it's a great system. What I really like about Hollow Earth is their system. But honestly, I think the system wouldn't be as good if you didn't buy their dice.
Oh, absolutely.
It's more of an even odd sort of thing.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, it's success or failure. And the dice are set up so that... There's three types of dice. There's one dice that represents rolling just one dice. There's a second dice that represents rolling two dice at once. And then there's a third dice that represents rolling three. And they worked with mathematicians and everything to make sure that it was statistically the same, that you would have the same probability of a success or failure, assuming that's 50%, so that if you have a roll where you're supposed to be rolling six dice, you don't have to roll a handful of dice like you would in a system like White Wolf's. Instead, you just grab two of the red dice, and voila, it's like you've rolled six dice, probabilities all the same for success.
And not only that, but it's just a really good-looking book. Well, first off, the book for Hollow Earth is extremely good-looking.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful pictures. And you read the book and you just want to read more. It's well-written and it's well-organized.
It's in terms of it being well-written, they also have a lot of respect for their for the reader.
Oh, yes.
They don't beat you over the head with what they're referencing. I mean, the first book I fell in love with because there's this huge section that's the history of the world in 1936. It's like, this is what is happening in pretty much every inhabited country on the planet. And there's also things like, this is what you remember from 10 years ago if you are this age. This is what you remember from 25 years ago. So it can really help you figure out what, you know, like World War One, it can help you figure out whether your character would have really been cognizant of it.
Absolutely, and that's extremely helpful when designing a character.
And then, especially in the supplemental books, when they start getting into all these fun myths that have sprung from the Hollow Earth, they're not like, this is where Bigfoot comes from. They just talk about this person that may be an ape man, but maybe actually probably isn't. And then Billy has one.
Oh my goodness, my favorite one where apparently in Hollow Earth, between Hollow Earth and between Earth, there's like these Arctic wastelands. And they talk about there's this rumor of this, like, man who occasionally saves people who get trapped there, doesn't talk to them, but his, like, face is stitched, he looks hideous. Basically, they hint that this guy's Frankenstein from, like, the
Frankenstein's
book.
Frankenstein's monster.
Frankenstein's monster, of course, from the book. And I love that. They are really good about tying in without it hitting you over the head, like, Amelia Earhart is here! It's like, no, isn't this interesting? And if you know your history or you know your literature, you're like, oh, I see what they're doing. It's really creative.
Amelia Earhart isn't in the book. I made that up.
I know. But I was just saying, I didn't want to go back to Frankenstein's monster. But if you know your history, if you know all this, you're really able to see some of the creativity out of there. They do a wonderful job. Is there anything about it that you really think they could improve on?
No.
No, honestly, this, if you're looking for fun, pulpy adventures, this is a solid buy. They have a great book. And here's the thing I love about it. One of you could read this book, get the rules down, and you could explain it fairly quickly and help people make a character, and you could start playing within an hour.
Mm-hmm.
It's really quick to start.
Yes.
So that's our top point.
And then things like combat go really quickly.
Yes.
Because I think one of the, I think one of the great innovative things about this is they have the rule of taking the average, which is, and I think technically you're not supposed to use it in combat because there's so many variables in combat that you shouldn't just rely on your average.
But you can use it for like skill checks.
Yeah. And it is, you know, you say that the difficulty for leaping over a river is 3. You have to have an athletics check of 3 or an acrobatics check of 3 or higher to get across. And, but say that you know, like acrobatics was your skill. You've got 7 points in acrobatics. So your average is actually
3.5 and you round up to 4.
Uh-huh. So, you know, you ask the DM, it's like, can I just take the average? Absolutely. Because you are supposed to be good at that skill. So you have the advantage there. It saves you from things like in campaigns where you've got your super awesome scientist who suddenly
can't remember how to,
you know, he forgets that hydronucleic acid is going to burn his skin.
Stupid. Actually, I think the rule is if you have like a 0.5, you have like 3 plus, and what you do is you roll like a one side.
Yep.
You see if you get a success or failure, and the average is either 4 or 3, depending on what you roll. Anyways. That is our top pick for this talk's role-playing. Mm-hmm. If you guys have not tried it, Hex, Hollow Earth Expedition, 2 thumbs up.
2 thumbs up. The system is actually called the Ubiquity System. I just bring that up because there is at least one other game that uses the system that is not Hex. It is, I forget the name of the actual game, but it's like the Three Musketeers.
Right. Okay, so it's a great system. Now, let's talk about something that I think is a solid game, but I don't want to beat it over the head because we talked about it earlier in Fandible. Part-Time Gods. Mm-hmm. It's an independent game, and I just want you guys to realize that it was one of the funnest games that we've played in a while.
It was a game that I had a lot of satisfaction with in the end in terms of figuring out what my character can do. I'm often the person that's sitting there at the table going, like, this game sucks. I can't figure out what my character can do. Bah, bah, bah. And I did have some of those feelings in Part-Time Gods because there was so much you could do that I was kind of paralyzed by choice. And it wasn't until, like, you know, 2 scenes from the end that I and the rest of the group began to figure out. It's like, holy crap, no, this is what this means. But by choosing a realm for my character, medicine, that was fairly wide open. It's like, whoa, you can twist this into all these different facets. And once we figured out all that medicine could mean, then it's like, okay, now I'm really into this. I just don't think it should have taken like 6 hours to figure that out.
So here's the thing about Part-Time God. A great concept, a great history, a fun book. Character creation takes some time.
Yes.
But sometimes when you have something like Part-Time Gods, where it's this very creative, that's going to happen. What doesn't help is it really feels like the book just needs a little bit better organization.
Yes.
Because there are times when we just could not find what something meant.
Something as basic as base damage.
Yeah, and while we know that, yeah, if we read the entire book from beginning to end, we probably might have realized where to look. That's unrealistic, I think, when you have a gaming group. Mm-hmm. Especially when you're an independent game. What you really have to hope for is people pick up your game, try it out, and they like it. We loved Part-Time Gun, and we're going to give it another try and have a great time with it. It's a fun setting. But we think the book was just, it could have been a little bit clearer on some things. So I would give Part-Time Gods, if Hex was 10 out of 10, Part-Time Gods was an 8. Or a 7.5. What would you give it?
Honestly, the book was very frustrating for me. So, not just in terms of looking stuff up during the course of gameplay, but I'm figuring out how character creation goes because it wasn't all laid out chronologically.
Yes.
So, honestly, I think I would ding it a little bit more, bring it down to probably a 6.
Okay. So, once again, the system itself is a little cumbersome.
Honestly, the system's a D20 system.
Right, okay. The system's not bad. It's just the organization.
Mm-hmm.
The organization's a little bit topsy-turvy, but once you get past that, it's a really fun game to play, and it rewards creativity. So yes. That's why I'm giving it a little higher score, about a 7.5. The system brings it down the organization brings it down quite a bit. But after you get used to it, and you kind of fudge some things and take a guess at how something should work, it's a really good game.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the last thing we've actually played was, and this is the last we're going to talk about, is we played Dread.
Yes, we finally got to play Dread. Daniel has been talking about Dread since the three of us went to Origins last year in June. So yeah, it's been about a year since we first heard about Dread, and a couple weeks ago we finally got to play it.
For those who don't know, what Dread is when you create a character, you're pretty much just answering questions about what your character can do. And during which, when a storyteller walks you through the story, you might say, I want to do this. And they say, okay, why would you think your character could do that? And you talk about like what you wrote down on your little paper. And you're like, yeah, he's a computer hacker that used to hack into the government sites all the time. And he's like, okay, this is usually a difficult thing, but for you, you can easily do it. But if you do need to roll or make those, you know, take a chance, instead of rolling, you pull from a Jenga tower. 1 or 2 or sometimes even 3 bars.
Yep.
And when it falls, it means you are out of the game. You die, and then you rebuild the tower, and you take a few out, and you continue. It was we don't want to ruin it because we're going to put it up on Fandible at some point, but we played a space crew, and it was a horror salvage mission.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out to be really fun. I think it's great for definitely those dramatic moments.
Mm-hmm.
My only hesitation for me actually adopting it is it's a game that someone's going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine, but a lot of my campaigns are, I like the riding into the sunset or something, sometimes.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure I've died in at least one of your campaigns.
No, people die in my campaigns. I'm not saying they don't. But it just seems like Dread is a very much like, yeah, you're not, you're waiting for the first person to kick the bucket.
And it's definitely designed to be a one-shot.
Yeah, it's absolutely designed to be a one-shot. And you know what? It actually makes you stop to do, like say I need to go hack a computer. And in a World of Darkness, I hack a computer, I fail. And this really makes you say, like, I don't want to hack the computer. Why? I might die. It's like, how does that work? So it is a very much, you have to really think about the setting of how could every action potentially take a person out completely.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting out of the shower. I just tripped and broke my neck. So I'm going to give Dread for its creativity because there's really no story behind Dread. There's no plot.
Yeah, I believe the game, when they released the game, they had a few pre-generated scenarios that came with the book.
Right.
Because I think Daniel said that he took at least some of the questions on our character sheets from a scenario in the game. But they were very widely different scenarios. You know, it's not like it's designed to... they're all horror-based scenarios. But it's not like all of them were set in space.
Right, absolutely. So, with that in mind, you're really just buying the system and some of the examples. It was like $10, I believe, on the PDF. I don't know. Well worth it. I'd give it, for its creativity, a 9. Like I said, I would say occasionally I felt like the system itself was holding me back from role-playing completely, and honestly, because, like I said, you can die by doing anything. But all in all, incredibly fun. The only downside is it's not really great for a podcast, I would say, unless you have a video link, because the dread of it is watching someone slowly pull a bar from the Jenga tower and watching it slowly sway back and forth.
See, I had such a blast at the Jenga tower because I'm a nerd and I love the game of Jenga. So I'm constantly like, yeah, I'm going to take a pull. Like, I was purposefully doing stuff to screw my character over because I wanted more chances to pull from the tower.
You're a braver person
and
than
then
I.
At one point, it was like, oh, wait, no, we need to keep Angela's character alive. Angela, you're not allowed to pull anymore. I'm like, oh.
Aww.
Because that is a cool thing that somebody else can volunteer to take your pulls.
Right.
You know, if it, like, we were, you know, at one point we're running, and people are like, no, we want to make sure Angela gets back. So instead of her doing a pull, I'm saying that I am giving her a hand, I'm pulling her along, so I'm going to pull twice, once for me and once for Angela.
Right, absolutely. So what would you give Dread?
I'd say 8 or 9.
Yeah, so
I'm much harsher than you are on stuff, so I'm like, yeah, 8 or 9.
Well, here's the thing. I'm balancing, like, a 10 out of 10 is Hex right now. That's, like, the best. Hex is not perfect, though, but that's, like, my 10 out of 10. That's my scale, so that's how I'm judging. Okay, so we've talked about movies. We talked about role-playing games.
Actually, one thing about role-playing games I wanted to throw in that we touched on a little bit with Part-Time Gods, and I realized this is what I'd mentioned a couple weeks ago. One thing that is integral for me for a game, whether or not I'm probably going to enjoy a game, I want free-form character creation. Because, for example, Hex, White Wolf, to an extent, I don't know, I'm sure there are other games, because I've played other games like this, where it's just, here is a list of skills. Supernatural does this. Here's a list of skills. There's really no limits on what you can choose from unless the DM puts them there.
You're talking about, like, where Warhammer does not allow you to do
yes,
that.
Yes, Warhammer, you're constricted by your class and what level you are. Level restrictions make sense to an extent. Part-Time Gods was, no, you choose, you know, which type of god you are going to be, and then 2 out of your 3 special godlike abilities are already chosen for you. White Wolf, your actual skills, you know, your attributes you get to decide yourself, your mundane skills you get to decide yourself, your fighting ability, your hacking ability, your medicine ability, and then admittedly your, oh my gosh, your
disciplines.
Plan pot, your disciplines. Your disciplines are pre-selected.
But not only, but you could always buy more of those. You could say, actually, I'm going to spend my points to get that.
Yeah, so
that
there is still some flexibility. And the reason I like the more free-form character creation system is that it allows you to create a much more, in my mind, it gives you the opportunity for a more complex character. Because
Agreed.
You can address things like a character who has had a midlife career change. You know, I used to be this battle-hardened warrior, now I'm a poet. Or vice
right.
versa.
No, absolutely, that makes complete sense, and I think that's incredibly important for me. That's something I want, because it allows me to delve into a character a little bit more. Like, oh, I play a priest. Why do you have 2 points in torture? And you're like, well, I used to do some horrible things, and that's why I became a priest.
In a way, we ran into this with Fortune's Fool when we played that, because I had a character who was from the court of Henry VIII, but I was, I was on the run with Princess Elizabeth at the time, and so not only did I have that, you know, fallen status in my background, but because of the way that the character creation was kind of randomized, suddenly it's like, oh no, my money level is the poorest of the poor, and no, you can't use half the weapons that I had already been planning on using.
Yes.
Because there is the, in my mind, silly restriction that if you are this poor, you are unable to use a fancy sword.
Yeah, no, I did not like that about Fortune's Fool either. But okay, so that I think that's what we are looking for in a system all the time, the ability to diversify your character.
Mm-hmm.
And I think out of our choice, Hex does that the best.
You know what is one game we've played recently that we didn't talk about?
What?
Marvel.
Well, we'll talk about that later on, I'd say.
Okay.
Okay. Well, this is Billy.
And, we're signing off.
Yeah, we're signing off. I'm done talking.
Well, thanks so much for listening, everybody. He's Billy. I'm Angela.
And we're just a couple of geeks. And we're glad to be back.